Hello, and welcome to a special episode of Mission Critical, a podcast where we explore the real stories behind modern entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Lance Chung, and today we're thrilled to be joined by a founder whose work is helping to redefine what community looks like for ambitious women in the workforce, Rachel Wong, co-founder of MoneyGirl. This episode is made possible by MasterCard, who, as we do, believe that when small business wins, everyone wins. They recognize that small businesses aren't just economic engines, they're cultural drivers, community builders, and sources of meaningful connection. That's why MasterCard supports small business owners at every stage of their journey by understanding their unique needs and building tailored solutions to help them grow and stay protected in today's digital economy. Now, whether it's building a platform like MoneyGirl or launching a product from your living room, today's entrepreneurs are creating businesses that reflect who they are and what their communities need. MasterCard is proud to be a part of that story. So with that, let's dive into Rachel's journey and explore how she's building something that's not only successful, but deeply impactful. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Rachel, hi. How are you?
Good. How are you, Lance?
Good. I'm so glad that we're chatting and finally like making it our discussion, this discussion like official, because I feel like it's such a long time coming. And like we've had the chance to chat at like different events and like through different kind of media things. But like this is our first time chatting for a podcast and I'm so happy, and it's long time. It's long overdue.
Yeah, same here.
How are you?
You know, I'm good. Busy. Busy's good. So
busy's good. Yeah. I'm sure like any small business juggling like a million different things in a given day, putting out a million different fires or whatever it might be. What are you what's on your like plate for today?
Oh, man. So, I mean, got this, which is great. I'm so excited to catch up with you. But I would say it's so funny. It's like really interesting being in this phase where you're growing up as a business, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like we're going into like, I don't know, like the teenager years. We're like, we have a team now. Like, this is crazy. There's people that report to me, and that's nuts. Yeah. So, yeah, we're just excited and we're juggling a lot too. So
that's so exciting. Yeah. Building on that, if you could just do a quick intro, your name, and also just like what you've built and like what's the thesis?
For sure. So I'm the co-founder of MoneyGirl. We are building the platform that's reimagining the world of networking for next generation women professionals. So this comes from a very deeply personal place because I'm like a lot of people, a first generation immigrant. Mm-hmm. And I was raised in a household that told me constantly that, you know, if you worked really hard, put your head down, didn't network, didn't try to climb the ladder with that, just really focused, everything would come into place. And I think that was really interesting because that was an ethos. I was like constantly being repeated to myself, just put your head down, work hard, and people will notice your hard work. And it was 2008 when all of that kind of went away because my parents lost everything. They built a business. The recession really affected them. So they had to start applying for jobs. And I saw them go in day and out where they're going to hundreds of job interviews seriously for every imaginable thing, no matter what it was, even though they had this amazing experience both in Canada, outside of Canada, and it just didn't mean anything, right? And they kind of realized that they're like, wow, this idea of access is so, so important. Like who you know could change everything for you. So it just really shifted how I thought about networking, what that really meant to me, and also just really interesting to think about how that means for women versus men. And that's kind of like more of a social experiment that started with myself and Isiana around 8 years ago when we're like, what does this mean? Like, what does this look like for women like myself? How do we design rooms where we feel safe and comfortable and want to network, even though it's such a dirty word? So it started kind of more of as like a fun thing that evolved into what is now over 350,000 women that follow us across North America. Hundreds of events every single month, which is crazy, and a large conference. So yeah, we've been going at it for a while now.
And I know how much work running even a small event is. There are so many moving parts. So the fact that you and your team are doing that is on a regular basis is like kudos to you. That is incredible. Just kind of like building on some of those notes, I think. Yeah, I mean, that is such a hard thing, one, to see your family go through something like that. And it is so interesting because the conversation, I think, around, one, networking, but also just, like, professional development is so very much, like, an intersectional one, too, where there are so many factors and so many things at play, whether that is your, like, you know, if, whether it's a gendered consideration, whether you're coming from like a minority community, like socioeconomic, that's completely different. Like there's, and like all, and then if you layer all those things on top of each other, it's like a completely crazy experience. And one person's experience can be so different from another person's. I think, you know, so building on that, like coming from a family of immigrants, same with me, mm-hmm. you know, you are raised to do, put your head down, do your work. And culturally, that's just kind of what you're told to do. But then in addition to that, in like a Western kind of culture, the quote unquote value behind networking and how people define that is so, it's so boilerplate, and it's geared towards a very specific type of audience. So what did building access mean to you with all this intersectionality in mind and these kinds of different considerations in mind? How did that factor into building out the brand?
No, I love that. I think the intersectional piece is so at the heart of that. Mm-hmm. There's so many factors. There's actually something called the networking gap. It's something that we felt every single day, but we're like, is there actually a term for it? Turns out there is, the networking gap. And it turns out those, depending on where you grow up, mm-hmm. like your postal code, where you go to school,
yep.
the first job that you have, that could have a 12 times advantage in giving you access to more opportunities, right? So I think with that, it was really interesting to think about the notions and the boilerplate definitions of networking and what that really mm-hmm, looked like mm-hmm, for, mm-hmm. for different groups of people. And it was really interesting because this was just anecdotal, right? Like this was me and Sienna coming out of school being like, do you like networking? We're like, no, it's so icky. It feels transactional.
Ick. Yeah.
Like yeah. you know, you walk into a room, this is 2016. So you'd have business cards and people will give you theirs and you walk out and you're like this whole pile of cards that you don't need. And if you're a woman, you know, like you don't know what this looks like. You don't want to go up to a guy because they could think that, you know, something weird is happening. So
yeah.
there's
yeah.
all these elements of it that just feel so strange. And I think like to pinpoint what that feeling felt like, it wasn't designed for a woman like ourselves, right? Like there was not mm-hmm. a safe space for us to go to actually connect. So knowing that a single connection can change everything for you, we're like, what does that look like for a woman? Because the alternatives, 2016 was very colored almost. It was very like grayish blue, like very LinkedIn, very like you'd walk in, name card, like
corporate.
Pizza, like super yeah. corporate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then like, I don't know, there was like cold pizza in the back, some like maybe tech guys in the back. Like it was kind of strange. It's like very, this like weird facade and everyone's like, I don't know why I'm here.
And
like,
everyone has lived that experience. Right? If you've been to a networking event in this city or in Canada in general, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're just like, why am I here? This is so crazy. Kind of leave being like, oh, I don't really know. And then the alternative, and this is, again, for us in the market, just being young professionals, we're kind of, like, transitioning out of that first job. So we're kind of, like, got some years under our belt. We're not necessarily, like, looking for a job, but we want to build that connection. We're like, what else is there? So it was, like, hot pink. Like, going back to the colors, it was, like, really bold hot pink, which is cool, which is great. But, again, very targeted towards a very different kind of woman. And a lot of it was, like, around this girl boss era, right? It was, like, yeah. MLM, like, build your own business, corporate girls in heels. We're like, that's great. That's absolutely a space. But it didn't speak to myself and Sienna, right? Mm-hmm. And then we're like, would this speak to our friends? Like, would this speak to the people around us that, like, actually have the same kind of concerns as us? We're like, no, not necessarily. So more selfishly, we're like, well, if no one else is going to do it, we should do it, right? So the inception of Monday Girl was purely selfish. And we're like, okay, like if no one else is going to build a place that feels interesting, feels safe, like we might as well design it for ourselves. So mm-hmm. it came from that.
And both of those things can exist in the same place at the same time. You know, absolutely. That, you know, that's the thing is that like we don't live in a world of like black and white or binary. There's so many like nuances and like what works for one community can work for another, or you know, there can be other options for other communities, and it doesn't have to be an either
or overlap, right? Yeah. Like constantly we're talking about this, and like actually on one of our pages we're like, here's some other communities that we love, like we highly recommend. If you don't feel like Monday Girl totally speaks to you or resonates with you, like that's totally fine. Like there's some other ones that we highly recommend and we love, depending on your experience, your journey. But I think the really interesting call out too was like the gendered experiment, and mm-hmm. again, more anecdotal. So like we talked to groups of women about networking versus groups of men, and like the reaction were just like day and night. It was so funny. So we talked to like groups of girls about like, hey, like how do you feel about networking? And he saw their body language. It was like they'd go inwards. They kind of were like, oh, I don't do that. Like immediately they're like, nope, deflect. Like, I don't do that. It feels very transactional. It feels icky. I wouldn't do that. Like almost very scared to identify with the concept of it.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Versus groups of guys, if you ask them, all of a sudden it became this like Olympic sport. Like they're like, I'm like incredible at networking. Like I go golfing with my boss. I do this. I do after work beers. Like I'm excellent. I'm like intermediate advanced at like like networking, right?
Right.
So it became this notion that they got really competitive over it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to think about the fact that like there is so much socialization around the gendered ideas of networking that, you know, if a guy were to network and go golfing, that's great. But if a woman were to like grab cocktails, for example, with like her boss or other people, that's just like socializing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting dynamic that we've seen. And like, it's more something for us to kind of like poke at and being like, why is that?
Yeah,
like, how do we challenge it, right?
Yeah. I saw something on your LinkedIn recently, or maybe it was on Instagram, of something that was on LinkedIn about the gendered differences between how men and women talk about networking and the stigma, I think, around it and what is considered an appropriate quote unquote networking kind of activity. And I can't remember what the exact instance was, but it was something around where someone in your membership on your audience was basically judged for, I think, was it going out for drinks or something and that was networking? Or what was the story behind that? Do you remember?
It's a crazy story. And this happened like super recently.
Yes. Yeah.
So exactly. So one of our members, she actually was part of the Ottawa chapter and they self-organized. They went out for drinks and it was so cute. There was over like 30 women that showed up, self-organized, went for drinks, posted about like, hey, we had a great night. This is awesome. We talked about many different things. And that looked great. Everyone liked it. We saw this one comment from a man that said, and I'm trying to remember the exact words because the exact words were crazy. Like, I can't even make this up.
Yeah.
He said something along the lines of going out for drinks is something that you're allowed to like share or celebrate now. Like, we should shame.
Questioning it.
No, he literally said we should shame women for this.
That is bonkers. And also the fact that someone would so boldly say that with their name, with like on LinkedIn too, I'm like, oh god,
it's like it was crazy, right? So like, needless to say, this in fact, if anything, like invigorated our community being like, this is why we do what we do. This is so crazy. And again, it's like this like question that we keep going back to. It's like, why are women being stigmatized for going out for drinks? Like, why are women being told if they were to connect with someone that might be seen as social climbing, right? Mm-hmm. Versus a man just being like, oh, they're really charismatic.
Professional advancement. Yeah.
Yeah. They're really good at like, you know, connecting with people, right? Mm-hmm. Like a woman isn't really seen as a connector a lot of times, but a man could be. So it was a crazy moment where we're just like, first it was like pure disgust and shock.
Yeah.
But then it was like, let's share this. Like, this is crazy. Cause like, this is again, reinforcing why we do what we do, which is unfortunate. But there needs to be something said about this.
Well, and it just, I guess, further underscores your thesis as an organization of why, like your why, right?
Yes, exactly.
It kind of also kind of brings me to my other point in that the networking experience, typically, I think when we think about it from a traditional standpoint is like in person, like, let's say, I don't know, like at a conference or a meeting, but there, especially post-COVID, the networking experience translating to the digital experience too, and how we engage with each other online through like platforms like LinkedIn or the language that we're using to talk about it. And if it's done through like a gendered lens or a socioeconomic lens or a perspective that's coming from privilege too. So how does that experience and your mission essentially underscore the digital experience when it comes to networking as opposed to maybe the physical experience?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would say first and foremost, I can identify with the experience of walking into a room being like, I don't think I'm rich enough to be here. Like, I don't think this is
it. I don't belong.
I don't belong. I don't have enough followers to be here. I don't feel like my job is cool enough. Like, you know, just like people can call it imposter syndrome, call it what you want, but you just feel like you don't belong, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I truly do feel like there was this underlying current of, you know, what does that look like? How do we create more safe spaces? That I do think being more digital and also offering those safer spaces to kind of get that start really was helpful. So the example being when we first were hit with the news of COVID, we're like, oh my gosh, what do we do? Because our entire thing was in-person events, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, if we don't have this, we don't have anything else. We're like, this is okay. Like, what do we do? And at the time, me and Isiana were side hustling. So we're like, you know, is it that bad? Like, you know, it's fine. Like my full-time job was picking up. So I'm like, maybe this is not so bad after all. But thank God I listened to Isiana because she was like, Rachel, like if anything, this kind of underscores what we're doing is super important this time because more people need access. Like more people need that feeling community. They need to feel like they're not in it alone. So kudos to her. This is before vibe coding, whatever coding was like really cool and trendy. She no-coded this platform, which became actually the actual platform that we launched Monday Girl Membership on. And again, I was so skeptical. I was like, will people actually need this? Will people actually sign up for it? She's like, yes, because everything that we've been doing has been building up to this point. Like we're just creating it in a more digital lens. And then I was like, okay, like, you know, if you think it looks, and I think it looks great, like if you want to do it, let's just launch it and see. The first day we got 100 signups.
Wow.
And that's truly without like a lot of promotion. We just like quietly launched it and like 100 people signed up. And we noticed that even though at the time Monday Girl was so Toronto focused, Monday Girl TO was like our Instagram handle.
Right.
Majority of people were coming in, not from Toronto.
Right.
In fact, I think we got people from like South Africa. We got people from London, the US. It was like crazy. And we're like, oh my gosh, like this is so interesting because and it made sense because at the time we were getting so many DMs being like, please come to this city. Please come to that city. We're like, well, we can't really because this is our side hustle and we can't be there. So we can't do it. And like it really just opened up this entire door to us thinking like, wow, like there's so much of what we're doing that could be, again, more accessible to people elsewhere. And this was like a really cool reminder and bridge of that.
That's it just further proved. And it also, I guess, allowed you to cast a wider net and see like, oh, there is one definite need for this. And if anything, a time like the pandemic was an opportunity to double down on what essentially ended up being kind of like the foundation of the platform. But then also to cast a wider net and like, oh, there's a need for this beyond the city that we live in. And then I guess figuring out just how to scale it and just manage it, right?
Yeah, which we kind of do backwards. We're like literally building the plane as we're flying.
Reverse engineer, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I know. There's so many ways to make it sound so cool and businessy, but we're like, oh, we just were testing. We're A-B testing. Meanwhile, we're just doing it, so.
I feel like the quintessential entrepreneurial small business experience is just like you're figuring things out as you go along and like whatever kind of like label people want to put around it. It's like, yeah, you're just figuring it out and seeing what sticks to the wall or in a lot of ways, like fake it till you make it. Like there's so much of that too, right?
Totally. And I think it's so funny because like, again, Mini Santa didn't come from like an event planning background, like let alone a business background. Like, again, like we were not qualified to do what we do at all. But again, like so much of it was like, we're just so passionate and we became our end customer, which made a lot of things really easy. But like, it's really funny now because a lot of people who are like much more businessy than I am, they're like, oh, wow. So you basically had like an MVP when you're creating Monday Girl at the beginning. You validated your customers. You understood there's a need. And then you launch like the new variation of it. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, but like, I mean, yes, like in hindsight, that's what it looks like. But we were just building and like, you know, just seeing what stuck. But I will say like a lot of that culture still hasn't left our team. Like, again, we're now like a team of 8, which is crazy to think about. But like I always tell them, and this might be the wrong thing to say, but I'm like, make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I really like if you're not making a mistake, probably like once or twice a week, you're probably not doing things like at the right speed or the right pace because you don't know because you won't learn as well as you would from a mistake, right?
1,000%. You make that one mistake and it traumatizes you and you're like, I will never do that again.
I'll never do that again.
I can already think of like 5 things from my career. I'm just like, never again.
Never again. I'm like, please don't like F up the company, but also just like, you know, like learn right? Because like there's no better way to learn. And if you're too scared, then you're just like not going to do anything. So.
Yeah, and you definitely, in my experience, learn way faster from failure than from success. And and it is one of those things. You know, we often hear that the old rules no longer apply. What are some of the outdated rules for running a business that you've had to unlearn, especially coming from maybe more of like a corporate background or more of like a traditional kind of business structure and then starting your own thing? What have you had to unlearn?
Oh, wow. I mean, so many things. It's really interesting. I do think my background, so, you know, right after graduated, ended up in tech, ended up at a small little company called Uber and stayed there for almost a decade, which is really crazy. And I got to work in so many different teams. I was able to help launch Uber Eats as a product and wore a ton of hats. So first started off in sales and strategy, then into ops. And it was really interesting because I didn't study any of that. Like, I went to school for media. Like, okay. I thought I was going to be a MTV VJ. Like, yes. I thought that was going to be my dream. You know, like, I even interned in Much Music. I was like, this is going to be it. Yeah. And they're like, actually, the Canadian media landscape is not that great right now.
Yeah.
Maybe not right now. And I'm like, okay. So, like, went to tech because that was booming. So it became my plan B. And it was so interesting because I feel like even throughout that process, I was, like, unlearning a lot of things about myself. Like, this belief that, like, you know, I was this creative kid, I couldn't do strategy, which is so crazy because strategy is creative, right? So I think a lot of these beliefs I kind of had to learn throughout the process of it. And I will say that, you know, growing a business is a lot of that, right? Like, a lot of it's just like, if you do feel like there's something to be done, if you feel really passionate about this problem that you're trying to solve, you will move mountains. Like, you will do anything to get around that. And I think that's been really, really powerful. I think for myself, a lot of the times I've been telling myself, like, I can't do the numbers side of it, the analytical side of it, because I didn't go to school for it. I didn't have a fancy MBA like the other people from Uber did, right? So I think a lot of it just is just, you know, passion that just trumps that, because you're just like, I'm just going to do it. I'm probably going to do it better than you because I care so deeply. I actually give a shit about these numbers. So I'm going to really look at them. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I have to figure out if I'm going to be able to pay myself at the end of the day. So,
yeah.
So that's important too. Really good at numbers. Yeah.
100%. I mean, it's so interesting because so much of the entrepreneurial small business kind of experience is also like, unlearning and dismantling a lot of the narratives that we set up for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that also comes from an intersectional lens too.
Totally.
And you know, even for me, like in my career, I actually didn't even go to school for media. I thought my narrative for myself was going to, was my destiny was to go into like science, like medical, whatever. And I was a biochem major.
Wow.
And then I ended up in media somehow. And for a minute there, I had this internal narrative where I was like, you know, I never went to school for media. I don't know, like, the proper, you know, this and that in terms of, like, I remember my first internship at a magazine, and I was going through edits with an editor, and we used this, you might know, but, like, we used this thing called, like, a TK just as, like, a filler, right? I did not know what that was, because I did not go to school for any of this stuff, so I was like,
I thought this
was, like, a, and so, like, anyways, it's just really interesting to navigate that experience as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, and just sometimes in some instances you are your own worst enemy because you've built up a lot of these internal narratives that block you from being, you know, a problem solver or good with numbers or good with people, like whatever it might be, right? And so that is I find such an interesting thing that is also just like such a human experience of just building something that you care about, and at the end of the day you figure it out because it's something that you care about, and it's also something that if you have experienced failures in, you learn real quick, right? You know, the Canadian economy is made up of like 98% small businesses in Canada, and you know, the stakes are pretty high for a lot of small businesses. In your experience, what is something what does meaningful support for small businesses and small business owners actually look like? What kind of support do you look for in the community, whether that's qualitative or quantitative?
I think it has to be both. I think it has to be a combination of making sure that we have the right ecosystem where it feels right to be building, where it feels like celebrated and we're proud to do that. I think we're bringing that energy back, and I really love that. I think it's really exciting to see people being like, yeah, like I have an idea, and everyone's like, yeah, that's amazing. Like, how can I help?
Yeah.
And I do think when we were starting, I do think we got very lucky because we had the ability to like self-fund ourselves through our 9-to-5s and not think about venture capital and not think about like loans, all that daunting stuff that a lot of business owners now have to think about, especially when they're first starting out. So we took a very untraditional route. And I would say that it was that luxury that we had to do that. And I do think a lot of people don't really understand that, like, you know, at this time, we're in a very untraditional phase of entrepreneurship. Like, mm-hmm. what it looks like to you could be so different than the other person. So you need the right perspectives and you need a diversity of perspectives.
Yeah.
Because I'm so glad that as we were like trudging along, side hustling, I got to talk to so many different entrepreneurs that had vastly different setups. Like it wasn't a one size fits all. And I really, really hope that, you know, with what Glory is doing, what we're doing, like we can get more of these stories out and just show that no matter who you are, no matter what problem you're trying to solve, that there's something here for you mm-hmm. and you can do it your way.
And there's no one path to
there's no one that path. Success. There's no science to it. If there's a science, we'd all probably be rich, right? Yeah. So it's like, I truly believe that. And a lot of people ask me, like, you came from the world of tech. Did you not feel immense pressure to raise VC? Mm-hmm. And I told them, I was like, well, I actually came from the world of media before that. So I didn't know what VC was. I actually didn't understand for the first 5 years of working at Uber why we didn't turn a profit and why that was okay. Why I still had a job. Like, I didn't get it at all. I'm like, I think we're a unicorn. That's why.
Yeah.
So it's like, I do think there's a lot of education that is so much more accessible now and it's fantastic. Mm. We need more conversations like that. We need to be bringing in different perspectives. People who did raise, people who didn't raise. But also money is king, right? Like capital is king. So creating more diverse resourcing for that, I think that's really, really important too.
Yeah. And yeah, diversity of narratives. Because I remember that era when like the narrative around entrepreneurship with like entrepreneurs were like the new rock stars, and you had all of these people that were like raising like just billions and billions of dollars, like a new unicorn company every week. And I was like, and it was
like
just
every day on LinkedIn, like I've raised. It's like, what? That's so crazy.
Now, like thinking back on it, I'm like, that was a wild time because it was like truly, I felt like they were just like entrepreneurship was the new like rock star, or entrepreneurs were the new rock stars now. And so I think as a result of that, I think that put a lot of pressure on people. It put a lot of narrative around kind of like success, but not in like a very toxic way too. And so now I feel like that has gone down, and we've seen a lot of those companies really like tumble after that.
Yeah.
And now we've seen a diversity of narratives where one size does not fit all. You can scale slowly, and that's okay. And sometimes that means that you're able to have more lasting power because you built slow. And there's an emphasis on building slowly, one step at a time, versus trying to become a unicorn in like an overnight success.
Yeah.
That narrative, right?
Totally. And I love that. I think it's so healthy to have these different dynamics. And again, like, yes, to like the slow, sustainable businesses. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys are like the powerhouses of our economy. Like, you guys are the reason that we have all this incredible opportunity in employing people. And I do think for ourselves, like, we're really proud to be bootstrapped. Like, it's something that I think has made myself a way better operator by learning.
Yeah.
Again, like, yeah. I could read all the business books in the world, and like, I just don't think I would learn the same amount from just like having to make these really hard calls.
Truly,
of like, where does this like 5K go? Where can I cut another 2K, right? Like these like really small amounts that compound over time. And again, I would say like, that's why it's so exciting to see this new wave of entrepreneurship where truly like so many more things are more accessible. Like I laugh about vibe coding, but like that's another thing too. Like it's so cool to think that like people now don't need to like feel like they're so technical to be able to build a product or validate that. Like that's exciting for us, and we're playing around with it. So like I'm always super optimistic. Like I actually feel really good about the future. I think we're gonna see like this new wave of like incredible entrepreneurs who have probably very few people on their team, and they're doing themselves, and they're probably doing it in a cool, sustainable, profitable way for themselves too.
Yeah, yeah. And to be an entrepreneur, you have to be an optimist, because the odds are stacked sometimes, and you just have to have almost like this blind faith that everything's going to work out and just keep going forward despite all the challenges that might be out there as a small business owner, right?
Yeah, and I love that people are like, you have to be DeLulu. And I'm like, we're past DeLulu. Yeah. Okay, we're so gone. Like, we're like, I don't know. We're a DeLulu mountain. We've climbed at the very top.
Yeah, yeah. You've summited the DeLulu peak.
Yeah.
How has your perspective on success and scale changed over the years as you've grown Monday Girl?
Yeah, I think a lot of it would have to do with the environment that I was previously in. So again, like speaking of seeing other people raise and all this FOMO, I still have very bad FOMO. It's something I'm personally working on. But I will say, like, a lot of the times you do feel this, like, mimetic pull to kind of follow what, like, the right people are doing. And I think for so long, like, being in tech, like, a TechCrunch article meant everything to you, right? You're like, I just want to be featured in TechCrunch.
Yes.
I just want to show I have this celebrity. Like, you know, maybe Shaq is going to invest in my company. Who knows, right? Like, someone really, really cool. And that became, like, the biggest thing that we would try to chase. But, I mean, for us, like, now it's just, like, completely shifted. I think it's the excitement of seeing your team just, like, feel so good about the work that they're doing. It's seeing your team just light up when they get these success stories come to them directly. It's like even meeting these people and hearing how like certain things in their lives have changed because of Monday Girl. Like that feels crazy to me. Like that's like the ultimate reward. So I think it's taken a very different shift. I think a lot of it probably is age. We've been at it for 8 years now. But I think growing into like the best version of ourselves is so important because like I have a team now. Like I have to be. There's this really funny meme that I keep talking about with my team, and they're probably so tired of it. But it's like this guy who's like skiing on this hill, and he's like not very good. So he's wiping everybody out. Like seriously, everybody on this hill, like he's going down. He takes one person out, takes another person out. It's like all over the place. The entire hill, like everyone's just like they're on the floor. Like they're down. And I just think about that for myself because if I'm not – you know, pushing myself to be the best version of myself. I'm not pushing myself to be the most calm version and happy and optimistic version of myself. What does that mean for my team? What does it mean for my customers, my community? So it's really interesting, but I've had to grow into that because when it was this mini Sienna side hustling, very different dynamics. So I think a lot of it just had to kind of be taught as I went along with it. So
it's also a lot of pressure to put on yourself too. How do you manage that and just also being able to separate yourself from that as well?
I think it's hard to fully separate. Like, I mean, I love Severance. Like, you know, like, I think that show is hilarious. And it's so interesting to think about, like, could you ever truly think about yourself separately from the business? And I think sometimes, yes. Like, I think sometimes I can, like, really compartmentalize and be like, okay, Rachel, figure your shit out so you can be better for work.
Yes.
Like, really, like, take some time. Like, you're not great right now. Like you're running on like a 4, like you're probably going to get burnt out like next week. Like I know it. So it's like getting really clear with like, okay, like what's your non-negotiables? So for me, it's like, I love movement. Like I'll have to book a Barry's class for myself and like cry during it, you know, like it's like those moments that I have to allow for myself and pre-plan. But I do think so much of entrepreneurship is so, so hard. You couldn't do this alone. I'm very lucky. I have a co-founder. She's incredible. I have a community now that gets it. Like, we're very open on social. We're very open with our community about what we're going through. I have a team that really gets it. But you need a village. You really need a village that just, like, you know, even if you're not always doing the right thing all the time, they just have your back. And I think that's super important.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also that kind of oxygen mask analogy where you have to, and in this case it would be like your business self versus your personal self, and like you have to be able to put the oxygen mask on yourself to make sure that you're nurturing your kind of like well-being in order to assist your and build your business. Otherwise both things could go down, you burnt out and everything like that, right?
And maybe this is just like a personal belief because I don't know if it's played out with everybody else, but I truly believe that you have to be a kinder and better person to be a better leader. I don't know. Maybe empathy. It hasn't played out. I personally believe that for myself. I'm like, how could I inspire someone if I'm not kind and great and like energized? I don't have to be the smartest person in the room, but I definitely have to be the most energized, right? Like I definitely have to be the one who is like really thoughtful and like really considerate. So I personally believe that business makes you a more considerate and better person. Again, I'm truly an optimist. So that's my core belief.
Yeah, empathy. So we're working with MasterCard Canada to interview small business owners like yourself. They recognize, you know, the importance of really like powering, underscoring, nurturing small businesses and the small business community and the role that, you know, partners and the broader ecosystem can play in providing support to these businesses to get them off the ground. How important is access to this kind of support at the right time, and especially for women founders?
It's everything because It's absolutely everything mm-hmm. because I love that we talked about intersectionality. I love that we talked about the gendered lens. There's so many things that immediately off the bat that I know for myself, I might have thought of like not being right for me. I might have thought like, well, I'm not going to apply for that bank loan. Like, I'm just going to try to figure it out. Mm. Or like, I'm not ready to potentially think about fundraising because I'm not there yet. And the amount of people that tell me similar stories and then they compare themselves to like, for example, whoever it is, a more privileged counterpart, a male counterpart, they're like, well, I raise in a paper napkin, an idea. Like, you know, it's like these are unthinkable things. Mm-hmm. And I think it doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean that one size fits all. It doesn't mean we all need to raise venture capital in the paper napkin. But I do think it's being able to understand what resources are out there. It's being able to get the knowledge, which is so key, and the advice for like what you truly should be doing at this point or focusing on. Mm-hmm. Because so much of that has set me up for success. And I think if we can kind of speed up that really, really agonizing and tough process that it is of setting up your business in those first couple of months, like being an entrepreneur is tough. Being an early stage entrepreneur is like even worse. So I think if we can help those people at the very beginning, it's like it's going to do wonders for them. Because I do think a lot of people do burn out before they're even able to get to the right point or productization of their product. So I do think it's important that we help them earlier stage.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, we've talked about community at a few points in our conversation already, especially as a platform that is so ingrained in and has built such a foundation on community. How do you define that? And what do you think it takes to build a tapped in, engaged community today as opposed to when you first started out?
Yeah, I think the concept of community has shifted. I always think it's forever going to be a buzzword. Mm-hmm. It was a buzzword in like the early 2000s where D2C companies were like, hello, we have like a product that you can now buy online. It's going to be cheaper. It's going to be cooler. And you're the community, right? So yeah. I do think that concept has never really shifted of it being a business buzzword. But I do think what people really crave right now is feeling this sense of belonging. It's a crazy time. I think even when we first started, it was, again, to make us feel like we weren't alone. Mm. And I think if you can connect with people in those small, nuanced ways and get them to realize that they're not alone, that's true community building, right? I don't have, like, the ultimate definition of it, but I know it's a feeling. It's, like, the feeling that you get when you're, like, I'm here, I'm in the right space. An example of this is actually with our community. So at the Monday Girl, we get constantly told, when I walk into a Monday Girl summit or room, I don't know anybody else. I usually come alone. I know I'm going to be able to be invited to a table to sit with them, to talk and eat. Like, I know someone's going to come up to me. I know I'm not going to feel alone, right? Mm. So it's that feeling of whatever that is for other brands, other communities to think about. It's like you just need that key connecting piece, right? And it has to be so authentic to you and your values. For us, it's always been very rooted in hospitality, which is kind of interesting. We've always thought about ourselves being the host.
Yep.
So it's like, how do you incorporate that into your business, whatever that means for your customers and the value proposition that you have?
Has your experience ever taken you, you know, with engaging with your community, has your community ever challenged you in unexpected ways or made you rethink anything or surprised you in any way or made you rethink certain things that you kind of or narratives that you had for yourself? How has your community challenged you if they have in any way?
Every day. And they should be. And they should be. I think it's so cool. I think it's so awesome. And I think that's another point of true community building. It has to be a two-way dialogue. Mm. You don't have a community if you're just like sending them newsletter updates, right? Like that's not a true community. That's distribution, right? Like I truly think that a community should always be in tandem with you, always challenging you and telling you where the next current is going to be. And I think that's something that I really do pride ourselves on. I think it's been our superpower. I also do think that being bootstrapped has allowed us to kind of pivot faster and be more thoughtful about that. But if anything, like, we're constantly listing because we don't have an option. This is our product. Our product is dialogue. So when they're asking for like, hey, like, I want to do more of this, or like, this is an industry that really appeals to me, or hey, the last event focused way too much on this. It's like we have no choice but to adapt and listen to them.
And listen.
Because that's you know what we're trying to build is like this space where they're like, that's cool, that's interesting, that's innovative. I'm actually gonna spend my hard-earned time with you. And I think that's something that we have to earn every single day. That's a privilege.
Yeah, yeah. And it is such an interesting experience when people actually end up spending money with you and you're like, I really need to do right by them in order to make sure that, you know, they believe in us as an organization and are literally investing money and resources and time. Mm-hmm. So what can I do to make sure that I am able to show that back or make sure that, you know, I'm doing right by the people that are investing. And it doesn't even have to be from like a sponsorship standpoint. It's just people
even
that are.
Even attention.
Yeah.
Even social media. It's like we always are like, we have like a very, it's like, it's a very like straightforward concept, but it's like the give a shit test. It's like, why would people give a shit? Like you have to give them a reason to. And it's funny because we've adapted that so much in the company culture that we actually have a Slack channel that says, do not be boring. And we will share either very unboring things or very boring things to just remind ourselves. And we're like, hey, we just have to make sure, again, we get the privilege and honor of being able to share time, space, attention, whatever it is with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I noticed, I mean, as well as your entire community, that you and Isyana are very, very transparent about your experience building the company and very visible. You've built your brand very visibly. What have you learned from being open about all the stuff that happens behind the scenes, behind the curtain of entrepreneurship and being vulnerable?
I think it's been fascinating because there's so many days as a founder where you're just like, you're doing the most unsexy thing possible. Like, you know, like we used to like lick 200 envelopes because we would personally send out our welcome kits and stuff them with the keychain with one insert. Sometimes we'd even forget the insert or forget the keychain. And then we'd rush to Rexall to ship them out because that was cheaper.
Right.
Like it was crazy. Like it was a whole thing. And we'd sort of just like dashing and then we'd like fix the dashboard because that was breaking. And it's so unsexy. And you're like, who the hell wants to see this? And it turns out people, it's not because they want to laugh at you, right? Like it's not because like, you know, it's even a pity thing, but it's just like showing that side of entrepreneurship, which I don't think, you know, previously in a different generation, right? Like, especially when we first started, like it wasn't cool to talk about that. It was cool to talk about the really, really good things that you're doing. It was great to like, you know, like flex all these cool partnerships and things. And I think like what we've really nailed down is the fact that people want to see the nitty gritty.
The human side.
The human side.
Yeah.
And also to the point of the intersectional side. Like I share a lot about the fact that like, you know, as a first generation immigrant, my views on money, my views on, you know, just like working really hard are completely modeled by that. And I think it really opens up more dialogue and conversation with my community too, to think about that from a different lens.
Yeah.
And also to feel like, okay, like I'm not crazy. Like I feel that way too, and it's because we had the shared experience. I think that's really powerful.
Did, I mean, building on that, have you ever felt like coming from a family of immigrants, a family from like an Asian culture, and the culture around just keeping your head down and not drawing a lot of attention to yourself, that's kind of been ingrained in us culturally. Has that ever been at odds with your experience of trying to be transparent about building the company? Like, have you ever struggled with that, those two things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so funny that you mentioned that because there's certain phrases that are even ingrained within our language, right? Like save face is like, you know, like a very popular like Chinese thing to say, right? Like the save face, you can't like, you know, embarrass yourself like that. And I think it's kind of contrary to like a lot of things that we're doing and putting very front and center now. But I think a lot of it has to do with the intersectionality of like being in a Western culture too, right? It's like, how do I weave in and appreciate the culture that I had? Because it's so integral and so important. And like, I see my parents show up now and they kind of sometimes get it. They sometimes don't. My dad still thinks I run a blog. And I'm like, that's great. I think you're halfway there.
Yeah, it's
so funny.
Baby steps.
Baby steps, right? Yeah. Like he's like, oh, that's so cool. And like, we'll be putting him in an event. We're like, Dad, MBA. He was like, sports? Why?
Yeah.
Like he's so confused, right? So it's so funny, but it's cool to celebrate that with them.
Yeah.
And it's cool to celebrate the nuances because that's what makes me whole. That's what makes me whole is this whole dichotomy of like, you know, balancing what I was raised with. And some of those are really principled, amazing things that I take with me, but also the dichotomy of like, you know, I've had to move past that. Like my financial trauma that was, you know, very deeply ingrained in me. Also something that was very deeply personal for me. I've had to unlearn a lot of that because I can't be this penny pincher if I'm gonna like grow and invest into like a growing business. So I've had to unlearn a lot of that, but also accepting that's me, that's who I am.
I understand completely. That's it resonates a lot with me. You know, there's a lot of programs and resources. One of them is the MasterCard Small Business Fund that helps women connect with mentors and other industry experts. Why do you think something like mentorship is such a critical part of growth, especially for women entrepreneurs?
I think mentorship is so underrated, which is something that I think people will laugh about because we get told mentorship is really important from like a very early stage. Have you found a mentor? Who is your mentor? Blah, blah, blah. But I think it's underrated in a few ways because mentorship can look like a lot of different things. It could be peer mentorship. Mm-hmm. It could be learning from someone that's in a completely different industry. But I think a lot of what it is just like getting different perspectives and learning from their stories in a way that will resonate with you much stronger, be more uniquely tied to your experiences. Like just to give you like a quick example, like I remember being very early in the world of tech and a lot of the people I worked with didn't necessarily look like me. A lot of the conferences I go to, these were guys with Patagonia vests and they had this fancy Stanford MBA and they would flaunt it and they talked very VC. I didn't know that was a thing, but apparently you do. And a lot of the terms they're throwing out just felt so condescending. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. Do I blend in? I'm like, but I can't. I don't have a vest. Like, you know, like
I don't have the uniform.
I don't have the uniform. I don't have the MBA. Like, how do I do this? Because I still want to be authentic to who I am. And I think it was just like being able to see other people at my office that did look like me and they weren't blending in. Like I remember Bozema St. John, she actually became our CMO at one point. She walked in. She had the most fabulous gold shoes. They were like platform heels and they were strappy and she had this cute little sequin dress on. She was not downplaying herself at all. Like she was authentically herself. So comfortable in it. And that there was so much
taking up
power.
Space.
Oh, taking up so much space. But just being so comfortable with that. And that was such like an important pivotal moment for myself and so many other women in the room. Because we're like, okay, there's a different way to do it, right? And I think so often now we're told like, you know, if you don't see it, don't believe it. And like that can kind of, because it's so almost overplayed now, people like kind of forget the meaning of it. But you really see it being played out, right? Like you really see it being played out when it's right in front of you. And you're like, wait, there's a different way to do this. And it's coming from someone that might have a similar experience to me.
Yeah, yeah. Is there, you know, in your experience and what you've observed, is there kind of like an unconventional trait that you think has actually been your superpower and has helped you excel that has also helped you, you know, stand out from a sea of Patagonia vests? Is there something that that you may have thought was kind of a weakness, but it ended up being your own superpower?
Yeah. I feel like the more like generous term for it would be like curiosity or like initiative. And truly, I think a lot of it probably is more likely impatience, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's still something I'm working on. It's like a good thing and a bad thing. But it's like, with Monday Girl, when me and Sienna were first jamming about how bad it was and like how annoying networking was, we're like, why don't we do something about it? And I was like, today we are starting the Facebook group. Today we're starting the first event.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see it going and I got so much excitement from that. I love the momentum. Mm-hmm. And I do think just like doing it, throwing it out there, and we kind of talked about this at the very beginning where it's like people look at it and backwards and they're like, oh, that's great, you like validate. It's like, no, just doing things, putting it out there, that gives you so much energy that attracts the right community, that attracts the right people around you to support you. Getting it out there is going to be the best way to learn. So for me, it's a little bit of the curiosity of like, you know, like what does this look like if we do it? A little bit the impatience, because momentum is everything. A little bit of the failing.
Yeah, and iteration, like just taking steps and improving.
Yeah, yeah. You should hate your first version of it.
Yeah.
I mean, some people don't because they're amazing. But like, you know, I always hate my first version of things, and that's okay.
So. Progress versus perfection.
Exactly.
All the time.
So that's something I preach. It's something that's been really helpful for us.
Where do you see Monday Girl in, let's say, 5 years from now?
I'm still on Dululu Mountain. I fundamentally see these stories, whether they're success stories from Monday Girl, someone got out of a toxic job, or somebody landed a whole new like career path that they never thought they could take on before. Like, that truly energizes me. And I think there's so many dynamics left that we can work together to solve and to fix and chip away at, because there's so much work to do. Mm-hmm. And I would love to take that across the world. Like, I would love for one day, like in London, UK, or like, you know, anywhere you are in the world, to think about Monday Girl being that place you go to if you're feeling like you're at those pivot points, that transition point, and you want that support and to know that you're not alone. And I think that's been very important for us, whether it's the free newsletter that we have, whether it's our social media, whether that's being a member, like all those things, we try our very, very best to make it as accessible as possible. And I think that's something that I just want to continue to build on.
Yeah, yeah. I'm truly just so excited to see you and Istiana building the company and really like what that 10-year kind of outlook is going to look like. Because I think you guys are going to just conquer the world. So it's really, really exciting to see. Just as we kind of round out here. So we've talked about just kind of this new culture, this new landscape, and this new definition of entrepreneurship compared to like what we grew up with, what our parents grew up with. Mm-hmm. What excites you the most about this next generation of entrepreneurs? Like, what are you seeing from your community, from the in-person experiences that you're hosting, or even the online ones, that is really exciting you and giving you hope for the next generation of entrepreneurs too?
Yeah, I think part of what was, this is my personal thesis, but part of my belief is that with that time of all that crazy, you know, like VC and unicorn building, people were building companies for just true profit. They're just like, I want to build this company to sell and I'll be a cool, sexy millionaire. And that's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. It's like that chase of that. Mm-hmm. I do think in this whole new age, we're raising a whole era of entrepreneurs who are going to be so mission driven and so focused on solving the right problems that they're thinking about every single day, because there's so much more resources and tools for them. And I think that's what really excites me. It's like there's this whole new thought process. It's like, you know, I'm not building this because I just want to be seen as this really cool person that's going to be published in TechCrunch or Forbes. I'm building this because I truly care. And if you really think about entrepreneurship as a whole, or you're just going to simplify it, it's solving problems the best way possible. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to create like a really cool generation of problem solvers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I've been so looking forward to it, and also just like catching up with you. And it's been really, really, again, just so beautiful to see the business grow, the community grow, and just not just the enthusiasm, but the joy that I can see just online from our end, just how much people are engaged and love and proudly displaying on their profiles that they're a member and they're part of the community. So I just think it's so amazing to see, congratulations on everything. I'm really excited to see how you guys continue to build.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rachel.
Whether you're building something on your own, supporting someone who is, or dreaming of taking that first step, we hope you're walking away feeling inspired, energized, and connected. We invite you to take the next step by joining the MasterCard Small Business Community, which provides small business owners the opportunity to learn, grow, and connect with MasterCard and its partners, plus gain access to events and resources to help manage and expand your business. You can sign up at mastercard.ca/smallbusiness and become part of a network that's as ambitious and purpose-driven as you are.